The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. Football Weekly Extra. Today, cup action in the League Cup. Despite goal by Arnautovic, Stoke altogether now are out of it as Liverpool steam to a final at Wembley, which they will win. Everton have problems with defeat in their other leg. De Bruyne has problems with Denis as Man City goes through for an exciting rematch of that 4-1 Reds victory. There's FA Cup fourth round previews. There's transfer talk as well as Goose gets the duck, but not a big bill. And we take a gander at the other major moves. All of that plus what's going on with Chinese football and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Hey, Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Hi, Paul. Say hello to the listeners as well.
Hi, listener.
Hey. Nick Miller.
Hello, James. Hello, listeners.
Great. And Michael Cox.
Hello, James. Hello, everybody.
That's the panel today on a special day in Podland with lots of cup stuff going on and transfers. Paul, you did the transfer talk this morning. Nick, you were all over it yesterday. But we're not going to talk about this now, just in case something breaks, Paul. Is that right?
Yeah.
We're going to hold off as long as possible. And the good news is...
gone, ideally.
Yeah, but we've got lots of stuff that we can fill in the meantime. For example, there's no Middlesex.
Yes, and yet I live there. That's
yeah.
That's what
so
I have.
It's a philosophical question, right there, isn't it? So
yeah. I was told to put it on my address, and yeah. Then it was only recently disclosed to me by a postman that Middlesex doesn't actually exist.
Wow.
It was done
where
away
did they put
with.
The letters?
It's purged. What, when did they what?
No, where did they put the letters?
I still get my letters.
Right.
Yeah, so please.
Well, where do you live if you don't live in Middlesex then?
Cards coming.
So Middlesex sort of exists in spirit rather than.
You know. I don't know. Michael, you seem to know about this.
Well, I don't think it's existed since the 80s. I think it was broken up into different parts, I believe. There was some kind of mini news story where residents were insisting they wanted to put Middlesex on their address because supposedly it kind of added value to the properties.
Oh, really?
Because Middlesex sounds very grand.
Does it?
I think it sounds quite grand.
Top sex, that sounds grand.
What's the alternative?
Middlesex is
do you just have to put on, are you London now? Or?
Well, strictly speaking, I should just put on the house number and the postcode, really.
Yeah,
all
that's
the rest
some of that
is superfluous,
place.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I like your style, Paul. In football news, there's also been lots happening. And Everton have done a Middlesex in League Cup terms. They're not in that anymore. They felt a bit hard done by. And you can kind of see Roberto Martinez's point because it was a spirited performance Wednesday night. They brought a 2-1 lead from the first leg to the Etihad. And for 70 minutes or so, it looked like they were going to actually hang on. And then there was that very controversial goal where the ball had actually gone out of play.
It did, yeah. And, I mean, Barry Glendening often states his theory that Roberto Martinez will blame anyone apart from himself for Everton's defeats. And I think it kind of fitted into that. Personally, I wasn't sure the whole of the ball was completely over the whole of the line.
Really?
It's pretty close, if either way. But I think Manchester City deserved the win. I think they hit the woodwork twice. Aguero had one of his games where he was just impossible for the defence to contain. And again, you know, the first leg, Everton's defence looked really, really solid and they were only broken down by quite a good counter-attacking goal from Navas when they were up for a corner. But this time again, they just looked disorganised. I mean, John Stones seems very out of sorts at the moment.
What happened to John Stones?
I don't think it's rare for a player about 18 months, 2 years into their kind of status as a regular to kind of suffer a drop in form. It could be fitness related. But it wasn't just him, in fairness. I mean, there was one moment where Phil Jagielka was outjumped by David Silva to a header, which I think was one of the times that City hit the woodwork. Baines, I thought, was a little bit suspect in terms of his positioning. So it seems like a kind of organisational thing that's affecting everyone. So I shouldn't blame Stones individually.
Right. All right.
You think Stones kind of indulged a bit by Martinez with this? He has this thing about, you know, playing the ball out of the back and not hoofing it when it needs to be hoofed. Was it Rio Ferdinand who was talking about allowing defenders to make their mistakes?
Right.
But, you know, is he being allowed to make too many mistakes? I don't know.
No, neither do I, sadly, Nick.
On the whether the ball was out, it's actually a really difficult decision for the linesman. I mean, it's probably about 60, 70 yards away. He's running at full speed. He's probably got the goalkeeper in the way. If they had the goal line assistants who were standing on that side, it would have been probably quite an easy decision for him to see whether it was in or out. Although that would have been in the previous system because now they stand on the side next to the linesman, which I think is slightly peculiar.
The person best placed to actually say if it had gone in or out was actually Raheem Sterling. So it's disappointing that he didn't pipe up.
That is true.
And say, Roberto Martinez, I love his post-game comment, which began, "I'd never blame a referee for a defeat, but..."
Obviously, managers aren't going to complain about favourable refereeing decisions for their own team, but wasn't in the lead-up to Everton's goal, wasn't Aguero fouled in that before Barkley then went on and scored? So, you know, bad refereeing decisions happen. And
no, you're right. But I also no problem with them complaining about refereeing decisions which cost them, but just as long as they don't start with, "I'll never complain about the referees, but I'm now going to complain about referees." Good news then for City as they go through to that final, except it's against Liverpool, who have already said that they're going to win, or at least Jurgen Klopp has guaranteed that. The worrying news for City is the fact that De Bruyne taken off in a knee brace. At the moment, they're not sure how bad the damage is going to be. The doctor thinks he cannot be sure. I'm quoting Manuel Pellegrini here, that it's a problem in the medial ligament. How does that impact Man City? He's been exceptional this season, but they do have a fair amount of midfield cover. Is that fair?
I would argue that Manchester City's best performances this season came before he signed. The first three games of the season, when Silva was central, you had Navas right and Sterling left, I thought the balance was perfect. De Bruyne individually has been fantastic, maybe City's best player this season, I think, in terms of consistency. But he's quite individualistic in a way, and I think he needs license to go where he wants. I think that slightly has damaged City overall. So I don't think it would be disastrous if he was out, assuming the others stayed fit.
Well, 28th of February then, Liverpool are the opponents. Man City or Everton, I don't care, we will win the cup, Jurgen Klopp had said Tuesday night after squeaking past Stoke. Wembley is a cool place to play football, but we go there to win. It's not much fun to lose. Ha! He said, probably readjusting his new pair of glasses. How about that Liverpool-Stoke game Tuesday night?
Liverpool may not win if they play like they did in that game. They stuck with it, I think, the better team over 120 minutes. But
really?
It was one of those slightly odd games where as soon as extra time came, both sides looked absolutely terrified to make a mistake.
Right.
It was like watching one of those old sort of World Cup European Championship games where they had golden goal. Everyone was just terrified of their own shadow, and they were desperate not to concede the goal. And I don't know whether they were both sort of playing for penalties, but it sort of looked that way.
Liverpool didn't manage a single shot on target, is that right?
If you say so.
None spring to mind?
None spring to mind. No.
Was Arnautovic's goal offside?
It was. It was sort of, a half a yard offside. It was It was a reasonably easy decision from the linesman. I'm not entirely sure why they didn't give it, but...
I think that was a very difficult decision.
Do you think?
Half a yard at that speed.
Yeah, but it was...
I mean, it's easy when you see the first replay and it's got a freeze frame and a line across the pitch. Mm. I think if you're sitting in the stand, those decisions are almost impossible.
Why don't they put lines on the pitch, Michael, in all seriousness? They have it in other sports.
Well, like American football
stuff. Yeah, put lines on the pitch, like a graph.
Well, they should
know where we stand there.
Yeah. They should surely be able to figure something out with lasers where there is a line where the last line of defence is.
Yeah.
Surely they can figure that out, can they?
Is it also true that Simon Mignolet was the hero? Certainly reads that way. Two saves in the penalty shootout.
And one of them, which turned out to be the crucial one, was excellent as well. I forget, who was it who missed that last penalty? Muniesa, yes.
Yeah.
He sort of stuck it right in the corner and Mignolet dived and saved it, proving that five-year contract was worthwhile.
Absolutely.
In fairness, he's not a bad shot stopper, Mignolet. I mean, I'd fancy him more in a penalty shootout than I would some kind of crossing shootout.
Right. Interesting stat. Interesting stat I was reading this morning that of the keepers to have made at least 8 appearances this season, there's 22 of them. And in terms of shots saved per game, he ranks 21st of those 22.
Yeah, that kind of undermines my point of view, doesn't it?
I don't know, because, numbers. You can make say what you like, really.
Isn't there some stat that he has let in the first shot he's faced in the last... four or five games or something like that.
There's also that great stat on the subject of goalkeepers about Sunderland. Each goalkeeper they brought in this season, there's been three of them, have conceded four goals in their first appearance. The reason I mention this is they've bought a new goalkeeper, or signed a new goalkeeper.
Is it Steve Harper?
Yeah. Anyway, that's in our transfer section, which is not now, Paul. That's for later. Oh, equally, one or two injury worries for Stoke. Arnautovic, I think, picked up a back injury. Is that right? Charlie Adam as well, not super fit ahead of their FA Cup tie at Crystal Palace this weekend.
I don't think Charlie Adam's ever super fit, to be fair.
All right, well, anyway, Stoke go out, Liverpool go through, and there is this rematch with Man City, who they had that famous... It was 4-1, wasn't it? Early on in Klopp's reign, and Firmino with a brace, I think, that day. A fantastic performance. Something similar, do you think, when they meet again at Wembley?
Liverpool do seem to play slightly better in the big games. Like they obviously play very well against City and play very well against Chelsea as well early on in Klopp's reign. So,
well, if it wasn't enough having these League Cup semi-finals, we've got a whole fourth round of the FA Cup on the way, and that's what we're going to be talking about after this.
Hello listeners, producer Ben here with details of an offer from Cornerstone, the official shaving partner of Football Weekly. You all know that shopping for razor blades is dull, as are the final shaves from the last razor in your pack. So why not save yourself time and money and get a closer shave than ever before with an uber sharp, uber smart, German engineered razor of the year from Cornerstone. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk/guardian, enter your initials, pick the delivery scheme that suits you best, and your shaving products will be delivered right to your door. Because you listen to Football Weekly, Cornerstone are giving you £10 off your first delivery. And what's more, if you're not 100% satisfied, they'll give a full refund with absolutely no questions asked. So head to cornerstone.co.uk/guardian to pick up a personally engraved heavy-duty handle and six award-winning blades from just four of your English pounds. That's cornerstone.co.uk/guardian.
Razor blades, Paul. You a fan?
I use them regularly.
Right. A lot of us do. You don't, though, do you, Nick?
I don't, no.
Do you just leave your hair just as God intended it?
Just to roam free everywhere.
All right.
I have a beard trimmer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. In other news, fourth round of the FA Cup this weekend. Which game has got you most excited, Paul Doyle?
Colchester Spurs, let's say.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Just because...
At the Western Homes Community Stadium?
Yep. It's a fine venue. And
I've not been there.
No?
No.
They do a good line in tribute acts. There's a Dolly Parton tribute act, Wham.
Really? Where do they... What? Within the stadium? Or do they have
yeah,
some kind
it's
of...
Yeah, it's a whole complex.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah.
Does the Wham tribute act bother with Andrew Ridgeley? Or is it just George Michael doing Wham songs? And then...
I haven't seen them, I'll confess. But maybe you should go along and
see. Do you know what they're called?
The Wham Tribute Act? Yeah. No, I don't. Maybe it's Wham without the exclamation mark. Could they get away with that?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. Maybe they could put like a semicolon or something like that.
Yeah.
Or comma.
What about a question mark? That'd be quite good.
Wham question act. Mark, yeah.
Wham? Like therapy. The band Therapy, remember that? Yeah. They had a question mark.
They did, didn't they? Mm. But anyway, yes, Spurs are going to be playing there this weekend. I presume so the real Spurs, not Spurs question mark or anything.
And, yeah, well, who knows what side he'll field.
Right. That's true.
Premier League teams do, and not just Premier League teams. Everyone these days tends to field second strings. But Colchester, it's good for them to have a time in the spotlight again. They have a bit of a proud FA Cup heritage. They've pulled off some notable shocks in the past. Most famously against Leeds in 71, Don Revie's great Leeds team. Mm. And even when they were a non-league team, Colchester reached, I think, the fifth round of the FA Cup and knocked out lots of league sides. So a bit of that spirit, and who knows?
Who knows indeed, Michael? Spurs, though. I mean, Colchester, I read, are 22nd in League One. Spurs very much aren't.
I mean, Colchester haven't won in the league since mid-October.
Really?
But, amazingly, have won three consecutive FA Cup games to get to this point.
Oh, right, okay.
So maybe the Cup is providing a nice break from their struggles in the league.
It has so far.
Yeah, I think you'd struggle to back them against Spurs.
Mm. All right. Spurs, who will be without Jan Vertonghen, who went down, of course, in unfortunate fashion under that flailing elbow of Connor Wickham at the weekend. Ryan Mason apparently are not there as well, but you'd still back Spurs, Michael. Still back Spurs. I thought, Paul, you might be plumping for the obvious choice, but of course you wouldn't do that.
Well, I confess I went for the one that's top of the list you gave me.
Right, okay.
That's as far as I got.
Right. Yeah, although actually there's a game above that. If you look, that's the Saturday fixtures. On the Friday, it's Derby against Man United.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people very interested in this, particularly after what happened in Man United's last game and suggestions that Van Gaal offered to resign and then that the club, he took some time to look at it and maybe that they're now taking things on a game-by-game basis. Do you think this game's going to go any better for him?
Well, it's hard to say because Derby are in a bit of a rocky patch themselves. Both teams fifth in their respective leagues, obviously Derby a league below United, and in a bad run of form. They have been going really well, and they were actually top of the Championship on Boxing Day, but they've, without a win in their last five league games, a bit of searching for solutions by Paul Clement, who of course, as he said himself yesterday in his press conference, is a novice manager, having been a top-class coach for many years. He's made that step into management. And tomorrow comes up against one of the greats of the modern era in Louis van Gaal. So it will be interesting to see what kind of approach he takes.
This could be one of those sort of... I think this could be a game where both teams could actually find a way to lose. They're both playing so badly at the moment. Derby are finding new and interesting ways to make a mess of things every game. Like a couple of weeks ago, they drew 2-2 with Reading, and this was kind of seemed to be treated as a disaster. Clement came out and said that's the worst performance under me, and the chairman, a guy called Mel Morris, who's also a fan, came into the dressing room to give the players a thorough telling off, and this was after a draw. And then the next game, they lost 3-0 to Birmingham. The game after that, they lost 4-1 to Burnley. So,
but interestingly, the Burnley match, he said that for 45 minutes it was the best performance of the season.
Well,
then they conceded two penalties and scored an own goal. Richard Keogh and Jason Shackle, who have been very solid for them this season, just had a little wobble.
Richard Keogh is a very strange player. He's kind of quite good for a lot of the time, but when he makes a mistake, he really makes a mistake.
Yeah, proper centre half. Yeah.
It's the FA Cup, so everybody wants an upset. And I think especially so in this case. What are the chances, Nick?
I can't quite work out whether this will be a game where, because both teams are playing quite badly at the moment, they'll both be very nervous and it will be quite a sort of cagey game, or whether they'll both kind of see this as a nice break from their other concerns and they'll just both go wild and produce
the way Man United did against Sheffield United in the last round, for example.
well, quite, yes. Yeah exactly.
Well, Clement suggested yesterday that I think he'll be he won't be going wild from the start, certainly. He did talk about the risk of leaving himself too open to this rampant free-flowing United side.
I mean, the FA Cup could kind of save Van Gaal and United. I mean, they're obviously out of the running in the league. They've been knocked out of the Champions League. The FA Cup, they haven't won, surprisingly, since 2004. And Arsenal have now moved ahead of them in terms of being the most successful team in FA Cup history. Ooh. So it's kind of a thing United will want to win. You know, we talk about top teams not taking the FA Cup so seriously anymore. But if I was Van Gaal, I'd be putting a lot of energy into this.
Mm. We've got the Europa League as well, Mike. We forgot about the
Europa League. Yeah, but I don't know. I'm not sure they'll want to win that aside from the fact that it would qualify them for the Champions League.
Right. Man City, meanwhile, they're off to Aston Villa. Last time they went there, it was one of the surprises of the season. They drew. Was it 0-0?
Yeah, one of Gard's first games, yeah.
Yeah. Is that going to happen again this time?
I would suspect not.
Right.
I mean, Villa have been quite good at frustrating teams in recent weeks.
They're five games now, Aston Villa.
Yeah, but no, I think City will have too much.
All right. Sanchez and Gestede, big doubts. I'm not sure if that means they won't be able to play or just doubts, basically.
They're just both very, very uncertain.
Right. Right. Arsenal, most successful FA Cup side ever. Is that right, Michael, you're saying?
Yeah, and going for three in a row.
The three-peat.
Which no one has done since the 19th century.
Wow. They're not in the best of form, are they?
They are inconsistent at the moment, I think. I think this game will be quite interesting because they've got various players who could return from long-term injury. Coquelin is in the running, haven't been out for 2 months. Sanchez made his comeback as a substitute against Chelsea, but could start here. And Thomas Rosicky, who you probably forgot about, who hasn't played since the 12th of June for the Czech Republic, is making his traditional kind of almost spring return and will probably score a couple of goals in the next couple of weeks and then get injured again and do the same thing next season. And there's a chance that Mohamed Elneny could make his debut as well,
right,
who we haven't seen yet. So it's maybe not the most interesting fixture in itself, but for various individuals, it could be.
All right, although Burnley, you just mentioned what they did against Derby last Monday, a big 4-1 win there. They're a side in form.
Yeah, they're a strange team. They are very passive without the ball. I mean, it's two banks of four, but there's no, you know, at a time when we were talking about pressing and trying to win the ball high up the pitch. I mean, last year, Burnley made the fewest tackles in the Premier League, which sounds like a kind of obscure stat, but it was really obvious looking at them. They don't make any attempt to win the ball until their own third of the pitch. Traditionally, Arsenal struggled against that type of football, but I think now with Giroud, they can kind of get crosses into the box and go long, and I think they'll have enough.
It'll be Giroud up front, do you think?
I think so. I mean, Wenger...
He won't be sulking or anything, will he?
After Chelsea?
Yeah.
Well, I think probably that's more reason to start him, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting thing about Burnley is they've got Andre Gray, who's the Championship's top scorer, who I think has a slight knock, but should make the game, which would be good because he's a boyhood Arsenal fan. So he'll want to put on a show.
Absolutely. All right. Lowest ranked team still in the competition. Do you know who that is, Nick? Carlisle.
Is it Carlisle?
Incredibly enough, it is.
Just off the top of my head.
Right. They are going to be... Oh, they're hosting. They're at home. Oh, fantastic. They're back at Brunton Park. They're 2 months away because of flood damage. It's especially good news because their fans travel more than probably anybody. We had Graham Hackney tweeting in the other day, pointing out the incredible distances they've been hauling themselves up and down the country. I believe, or at least he suggests, and I haven't even bothered to check his numbers, in the FA Cup that they've already travelled almost 3,000 miles. But anyway, it's Everton who visit. Whew, lowest rate. There's a chance for a real upset here, surely, Paul.
Yeah, there is. I mean, Carlisle gave Liverpool a good game earlier in the season. There'll be a hell of an atmosphere there. I think it's their biggest attendance for about 30 years. It's, as I said, their second game back at Brunton Park after the new ties were formed between the club and the community as the players helped a lot of the people affected by the floods to get to safety and protect their belongings and all the rest of it. Everton are under pressure, obviously, as a result of going out of the League Cup and the mounting criticism on Martinez and his wacky ways. And so this is a competition that Everton could do with winning.
Yeah.
And Carlisle will try to make it very tough for them.
Right. He famously won this competition, of course, with Wigan.
Yeah.
The season they got relegated, less happily. John Stones may have his hands full because they have... former England youth international up front to the Cumbrians. 6'2", he's a big chap. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. Carlisle fans will know him, possibly as Jabo Iberi. Oh, it's his birthday today. Happy birthday to you, Carlisle Danger Man. You're 33. There's plenty of experience he brings to this particular fixture.
The fact he was a youth international kind of halfway through his existence on the planet. That's quite a long time ago.
It must have been a while. But he's got 12 goals in 15 games this season, and you can't argue with numbers like that, Michael. There are lots of other fourth-round games that we could talk about, but one I'd just like to mention, Portsmouth against Bournemouth, as has been flagged up. This rather neat bit of symmetry here. When Portsmouth lifted the FA Cup in 2008, Bournemouth, they'd just been relegated to the bottom tier and been docked 10 points for going into administration. Now those two sides meet again with almost a completely reversed position. I say almost because it's not like Bournemouth have just won the FA Cup, but they're doing really well, and Portsmouth are down in League Two, having all sorts of problems, and should be a cracking atmosphere, of course, at Fratton Park.
Is that? And Sylvain Distan, of course, played for Pompey in that final, and he'll be playing for Bournemouth this weekend.
Yeah.
Is that a derby? My south coast knowledge
they're pretty close together. Yeah,
it could be.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm right in saying that Southampton lies betwixt the two. That'll be a big one, the Harry Redknapp derby. That's going to be exciting. As will part three today, because it's where we finally get to let rip on the transfers. The transfers with just days left in this January window. Woo!
Squarespace.com.
Well done for hanging on for this, listeners. And it is going to be worth it with Paul Doyle, who was all over the rumours this morning. And Nick Miller,
who was,
that's true. This morning is a long time ago in football transfer news, which means, Nick, you're virtually redundant with your yesterday's news.
Yesterday.
Oh. What was the big story yesterday? Let's have a giggle.
Well, Ashley Cole signed for LA Galaxy. Is that big?
Yeah, that was big.
They're building up quite a good team for the 2008 season with Steven Gerrard and Robbie Keane there as well.
Right.
I thought MLS teams were only allowed one or two sort of marquee players. Is that rule changed now?
I think it's up to three now.
It's up to three now. Okay. Mm.
Of course, the real question is, why hasn't he gone to China? That's where everyone's going now.
Including Ramirez.
Yeah. How surprised were you with that bit of news?
Well, not particularly surprised that Chelsea sold him, particularly the $25 million or whatever it was that was paid for him.
But it seems to me, to my ill-tutored eye, to be a pretty useful player for Chelsea.
He was doing okay. I think he's kind of expendable.
Is he?
I mean, when you get an offer like that,
right?
I mean, that's a
he's useful, but $25 million is even more useful.
Yeah, and he's a very strange kind of marquee signing, isn't he? I mean, usually you think if you're, and I confess I don't know anything about this side other than the fact that they're coached by Dan Petrescu,
right,
another former Chelsea player. Mm. But you think you want your star player to be like a really creative number 10 or a brilliant goal scorer, whereas Ramirez is very kind of hardworking and tactically disciplined and all the rest of it. I can't imagine he'll be a
But isn't that good? Isn't that if you want someone to lead by example?
To set the example, maybe.
Yeah. Mm. That's what you want from your marquee. That's how you get to be a top pro, be dynamic like him.
It's
better than signing some flair player who'll just
I'm thinking possibly in China, you know, that especially that fits in with the whole kind of mentality of
possibly. And yeah. And I think if you are, I mean, to agree with you to a certain extent, if you are that kind of side, I think it's worthwhile signing a player still at their peak. I mean, that's why the MLS finding to a certain extent, you know, they've signed Pirlo and he clearly can't be asked, whereas they've signed Giovinco and he's, you know, lighting up the league.
Yeah, he really is. You famously watched 16 or 17 games before breakfast, Michael. I'm wondering how much time you're now making in your schedule for Chinese football.
I don't think I've seen a minute of the Chinese league, I'm afraid.
Are you planning to?
Not particularly. What time's... Well, it will be on before breakfast, so...
That's true.
Useful in that sense, but otherwise...
But when you look at some of the names, here we go. You mentioned Dan Petrescu, Vandeli Lusenberger, Zaccaroni's there, Scolari... Sven, of course. Lippi was there. It's not anymore. And some of the players. I mean, the players are flooding there at the moment. Fredy Guarín, major talent.
Yeah.
Jovinho, major talent. He's gone to, I think this is called Hebi China Fortune. It's a good name. Cheick Tiote might be moving out there this week. Demba Ba, Paulinho, Mohamed Sissoko, Alessandro Diamante's gone back there, I believe. Right.
There must be some, you know, Carlisle fans must look at the away trips in that league and think that we've got it easy, actually.
That's very true. Their rules, by the way, in China on foreign players, you can have five per team. You're allowed four on the field in each game. But one of them has to be, at least one, has to be from the Asian Football Confederation.
Well, on the subject of Chinese footballers and mandatory.
Are you going to talk about the Portuguese second division?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
As always.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for anyone who hasn't seen, there is a new sponsorship agreement in the Portuguese second tier with a Chinese company. And as part of this agreement, 10 of the teams in the Portuguese second tier will have to have Chinese players and then will have to play them a mandatory number of minutes.
Can I update you on that? They've actually now withdrawn that mandatory condition of their sponsorship.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was very much their intention. We're going to pay you this money. It's now going to be called I think it was called the Ledman something league.
Okay.
As opposed to the Segunda Liga. And, but yes, they've now backed down on their demands that 10 Chinese players be in the starting lineup of the top teams.
Okay.
Mm. But
so
still,
so what I've said is redundant there. Yeah.
No, but it's just still fascinating that Swansea would come in. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've each got to have a Chinese player in your lineup. Who's your favourite Chinese player ever?
Well, Sun Jihai is in the English football's Hall of Fame, of course.
Right. Really?
Did you not see this a couple of weeks ago? The Chinese president came to visit England.
Oh, yeah.
And went around the country with David Cameron, and they visited the National Football Museum, who just by coincidence that day happened to be putting Sun Jihai in the English Hall of Fame alongside, you know, Jeff Hurst and Bobby Charlton.
That's maybe why he came over.
Yeah, well, it's a happy coincidence. Yeah.
What listeners don't know is we've actually been sponsored to have that section. Yeah. In other news, who's done well then? It's been a bit underwhelming, am I right so far? But things are beginning to pick up now. Paul, did you feel a bit of a buzz this morning on the wires?
Yeah, well, Leicester have been linked with lots of people, including Ahmed Musa of CSK Moscow, the Nigerian winger, and he's a very exciting player when he's on form. But they did already sign a winger who I only saw against Spurs in the FA Cup match, a 19-year-old guy they got from Birmingham, Gray. And he looked fantastic.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah, he looks a really promising player. So, in the Riyad Mahrez mould, very tricky, very direct, very fast, and very exciting to watch. So, hats off to Leicester.
I think he's the skinniest footballer I've ever seen.
Well, Mahrez is very skinny too.
Yeah, he looks skinny because he's quite tall, but he looks like a stiff breeze would snap him in half.
Was the latest on this notion that Chelsea are in for Leicester's Jamie Vardy?
That's what various papers are saying, and with Loic Remy possibly going in the other way to soften the blow to Leicester. I'm not sure how much that would soften it, though. There's only one obvious replacement for Jamie Vardy among Premier League strikers, if you were available, and that's the striker who's most like him in the Premier League, Shane Long.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Apart from his finishing.
How come? Yeah, all right. Apart from his finishing, right. Okay. Leicester supposedly also extremely interested in Sampdoria's Adair, who, he's having a great season, but he's already of a certain age, Adair. But yeah, he's been very good. And you can make jokes about his aerial prowess as well. Anyway, now, deals that have actually gone through. Adebayor finally has found himself a new club. He's gone to Palace until the end of the season. Is this good? Is that good business?
I mean, it's Emmanuel Adebayor on a short-term contract, which usually works out quite nicely for people.
If he's fit.
If he's fit.
Yeah.
He posted a topless selfie to prove that he was
fit. Was he sitting on a fast car or not?
No, not that I can remember, no. But he was posting that to show that he was in shape.
What did you think, Michael?
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Apparently some people are quite... He said... yesterday that he didn't really know anything about Crystal Palace. Apparently some people are cross about this. But I think this is one of the things that people think football fans care about, but I can't imagine that anyone would care. As a Forest fan, if someone signed for Forest and said they'd never heard of Brian Clough, I wouldn't care in the slightest. Am I completely out of touch there? Or?
It seems reasonable. Yeah.
As long as he scores the goals...
I mean, he did say that he would Google them because he wanted to find out.
Which
I thought was quite pleasant.
He's probably been, you know, tied up in contract negotiations. He hasn't had time to look at Crystal Palace's Wikipedia page yet.
By all accounts, he has a very busy life, Adebayor. Also going through this week, Andros Townsend to Newcastle. Andros Townsend to Newcastle, Paul, for, I believe, only £2 million more than Dimitri Payet cost West Ham. So that's great business.
Yeah.
He plays a lot. He must be tired. He's played three games this season, Andros Townsend. What happened to him? I'll tell you what, here's Lucas W. who says he only got this expensive because he ran with the ball twice 2 years ago. Is that a fair appraisal of his career so far?
Well, I was going to say something similar. I don't think he's a £12 million player or whatever. I'm not surprised Spurs let him go. He can be exciting sometimes. He will run fast with the ball and get by players, and one in 73 of his shots will go in.
Mm.
And I wouldn't have spent that much money on him.
Right, you're not a fan. Newcastle, by the way, have spent more money than anyone in this transfer window.
The Andros Townsend thing seems like one of those transfers, rare transfers where everyone seems to be quite happy.
Right.
Because obviously Spurs are doing okay without without him and their team. They've got 12 million for a player they aren't using, and Newcastle, I mean, I've always thought Townsend was a bit of a waste of space, but apparently Spurs fans who watch him much more than I do say he's, you know, he's slightly better than that. So
really?
He did help, in fairness to him. A few years ago, he went on a loan spell to QPR and was brilliant for them for a while, and I think helped keep them up or helped mitigate their fall slightly.
There's been suggestions about him that he's not always the most harmonious presence in the dressing room, and certainly there was a recent bust-up at Spurs with
I think that was a one-off.
I think he's quite a nice lad. He seems quite grounded and quite humble.
Okay.
I'm not sure he's a great player, but I'd quite like to see him do well, because when he did have that spell where he played for England a couple of times and was brilliant, he was very exciting.
He was, wasn't he? That's quite an exciting team that they're putting together at Newcastle.
I mean, people joke about the you know, they only perform on TV, but it is strange because every time I see them, they are really good. And you look at them and they're in the bottom three, but they've got the players.
Right.
I mean, McLaren has got a good squad there. So if they continue to, you know, lose every other week, then I think he'll be in trouble.
This theory about them only performing well in front of a big audience, it's funny, it was borne out by a game they had this midweek. They took on Sunderland behind closed doors. And so the worst conditions possible for their fame-hungry players, and naturally lost 6-0, apparently. And, Duncan Watmore scored a hat-trick.
Did this actually happen?
Well, apparently. Nobody was, you know, is that a philosophical question? If they played behind closed doors, did it actually happen?
But why were they playing Sunderland behind closed doors?
I don't know. I didn't know anything about this. But
I mean, Watmore's borderline first-team player.
Right.
So it seems strange that they would...
I don't know.
Are they both out of the cup? Or did they not have fixed? They're not on my list.
I believe they're both out of the cup. Yeah.
So,
you know, to keep themselves busy.
Beats a trip to Dubai.
Yeah. Steve Harper, as we mentioned, joining Sunderland. Pantilimon's gone to Watford. Chelsea signed Pato on loan. Probably that should have been up at the top as a headline, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Where do you stand on that, Michael?
It strikes me as an odd move. I mean, he's had a difficult few years, Pato. He seems to have recovered a little bit in terms of goal scoring, but he's been playing off the left for the last year or so. And Chelsea have players in that position, albeit not playing very well. But I'd fancy Hazard or Pedro to rediscover their magic more than I would Pato. It strikes me as Chelsea wanting to show that they're doing something. I don't think it makes much sense. But I think if they'd had a quiet transfer window, people would have said, why are you not trying to, give his team some kind of boost? But I can't imagine him staying on past the summer.
Right. I mean, if he does rediscover his form, we could all be saying in a couple of months' time, what a brilliant move. Why did nobody else come in for him? He certainly looked delighted.
He looked like he couldn't believe his luck.
Yeah.
It would be good to see him do well, because when he first broke through at Milan, he was incredible.
Yeah.
But it seems like he was played an incredible amount at quite a young age, and it seems like he might have just had burnout at a really early age, which is quite sad.
I think he had something like 13 different injuries on the same leg. There's always been that question mark about how, you know, whether his frame is robust enough for his football. Liverpool could cap off this old transfer window with a couple of big moves. John Matip out of Schalke, but above all, Alex Teixeira, who is, by popular consent, a really exciting player, and also probably not the player that they need for any of the things that are really pressing concerns for Liverpool. Is that fair?
Maybe not, but I imagine they're building. I don't really understand what Liverpool are trying to do for the rest of this season, really, apart from in the Cup. I mean, they're not going to come into the Champions League.
They're not that far off European positions.
I'm not sure they'll be that fussed about Europa League. I could be wrong, but I just think Klopp's looking longer term. He's wanting to build his own style of football. And Teixeira kind of fits into the way he wants to play. He's versatile, he's quick, he's really high tempo. In theory, he would combine well with the likes of Firmino. So it would be very exciting. Yeah.
All right. Four Brazilians Klopp will have there now.
Coutinho, Firmino and Lucas. Yeah. That's not very exciting anymore, though, is it? Like, Chelsea have got loads of Brazilians and they're all quite...
Well, they've got one less now.
Thuggish.
Yeah. Swansea got a new Italian, Alberto Polosco. They picked up for 8 million. Nathan Lewis says any Italian keenos know if this is a good thing. I'm actually really excited about this. I've always liked Polosco. He famously scored on his debut. It was in the Cup, Coppa Italia. I think he was a 17 at the time, and it was Milan youth product. And he came on. They'd had tremendous success with El Shaarawy. Then Poloski came through and scored 20 seconds into his debut. And I wish I could remember who it was against, but it was against a big club. It was either Inter or Juve or something. And then, of course, he couldn't find any room in the first team, so he got loaned out to Parma, where he won the promotion. He went to Genoa and Chievo. And he's been a kind of regular-ish scorer, or usually around the sort of like 10, 11 goals a season. But he's now... I think he's now 26, so, wow, time has really moved on. So there are question marks over this, but I always thought he was a really exciting player. I could never understand why he didn't get more space at Milan.
When I've seen him, he always looks lively.
Yeah.
He's not someone who kind of fades from games. He's always doing things, making stuff happen.
Mm.
And maybe that's what they need.
Have you seen much of the winger that Bournemouth signed on loan from Roma, Iturbe?
Juan Iturbe.
He scored, well, he scored a hat-trick in midweek, apparently.
Oh, did he?
Against Gillingham
in a
under-21 game or something.
Right.
And could play this weekend.
Well, I mean, he's another very lively player, but the form which won him that big move to Roma was conspicuous by his absence in his, I think, season and a half in the capital. He was there for a year and a half, wasn't he? And he just never did it, never really beat the man, put crosses in, any of the things he was supposed to do. But again, he was a terrifically exciting player, and it'd be great to see him do well again.
You mentioned El Shaarawy there.
Ah, yeah.
He's just moved to Roma.
He's just gone to Roma, yeah.
What went wrong there?
I don't know, but there's something that's gone very wrong, because he's been out on loan at Monaco, and they didn't want to keep him. I've never seen any suggestions of what the Italians would call a lifestyle that doesn't befit an athlete. That's the phrase they use. But... He had a brilliant first season with Milan, came in and pretty much carried the team on his shoulders despite being a teenager still. Since then, a lot of injury problems, and now doesn't seem to be able to hold down a place in the first team. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits in at Roma, where he will occupy, one imagines, that left-hand side role in a kind of three behind Edin Dzeko. We'll see. I mean, Spalletti about that. Fingers crossed for him as well.
I mean, by what you say, kind of broke into the Milan team very young.
Mm.
Loads of injury problems. I expect Chelsea will sign him on loan in about 4 years' time.
Yeah, very possibly. And also we should mention Mario Suarez, who I'm not sure if he has gone. Has that gone through now for Watford? Never really settled, I think, is the view at Fiorentina. But he's back with Sanchez Flores, who had him previously at Atletico Madrid. Were you a fan of his?
Well, he was brilliant at Atletico.
Yeah.
In that kind of really aggressive, you know, battle-ready style that Simeone had. But for Fiorentina, who are very much playing high up the pitch, want players who are really comfortable in possession, I don't think he fits. But I think he could do well in the Premier League.
Yeah.
He was briefly linked to Liverpool, which I'm convinced is solely so that websites could run Liverpool in for Suarez rumours. Get lots of clicks. But he'd be a good signing.
Right. Is that the same reason that Spurs are in for Moussa Dembele?
Yeah, that's going to be particularly confusing, because
he
can't even say the one who came from Fulham.
Right.
Yeah.
There are a couple more Moussa Dembélés out there as well that Fulham can presumably sign and then sell on to Spurs in a few years.
Brilliant.
I think there is a difference, though. I think the younger Moussa has two S's.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the other one has one.
Okay. All right. Well, just to mention quickly a couple of other things. One is Di Maria has struck again. Have you seen his latest goal? He scored this brilliant two at the weekend, and another cracker in the League Cup in France. And also on the subject of cups, they had the Coppa Italia semi-finals, first legs. Did you see any of these, Michael?
No.
All right. Well, there were big games. On one hand, you had Juventus taking on Inter and beating them 3-0, which is important because Alvaro Morata hasn't scored since the 4th of October. He got a brace, with Dybala as usual chipping in with the other one. Inter are now in all sorts of problems. Just one win in their last five. They've only scored two goals in their last five, and they've got the Milan derby this weekend. Luckily, it being the Milan derby, it's against Milan, who are absolute rubbish, and only just squeaked past third-tier Alessandria in the first leg of their Coppa Italia semi-final. 1-0. It was actually Balotelli who scored the penalty. Back in the starting lineup, had an absolute shocker of a game, but he did convert the penalty, and that gives them a 1-0 lead to take home to San Siro for the second legs. Should be an absolutely sizzling derby this weekend. Usual place if you want to watch it. maybe something nice will happen, and maybe it'll be an absolute stonker. I mean, it's always a passionate. You get incredible atmosphere. That's the thing. You get amazing atmosphere.
It's good because it's slightly sad when you watch an Inter Milan game and the San Siro's half empty.
Oh, I know.
There's something about that stadium. It just looks really bad.
Well, I think any stadium, but particularly you're right, yeah. San Siro. The good thing about this one is you get the most extraordinary pre-game builder. Unfortunately, that only underlines the fact sometimes that the performances, once the whistle blows, are not at quite the same world-class level. But fingers crossed for this weekend. Anyway, that's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. Many thanks to Paul Doyle for being with us, and Nick Miller, and Michael Cox, and you, listener. Producer Ben would like me to point out that on Monday he was not wrestling with John Ashdown at all. He actually was having a lovely meal with his special person, which is, again, not John Ashdown. And on Friday, tomorrow, as we sit here, tomorrow is his wrestling with John Ashdown day. He seemed most perturbed that I might have in any way conflated those events. And, of course, it's his birthday, what, on Saturday, Ben, is it? Right. There you go. Many thanks, listeners. We'll be back on Monday, and hopefully you will be too. Have a great weekend.